Sneen fortsætter her i formiddagstimerne i den sydlige og østlige del af landet. Ellers klarer det op fra nordvest med lidt eller nogen soltemperaturer mellem frysepunktet og 5 graders frost. På Bornholm bliver der overskyet med lidt regn eller slud og mellem 1 og 4 graders varme. Nu kan du høre mikrofonholder med August Rosenbaum og Johan Johansson.
August Rosenbaum. Jeg er pianist og komponist. Jeg har fået lov til at invitere Johan Johansson, islandsk komponist og musiker, producer, til at tale med mig i dag. Og vi har mødtes på den frie udstillingsbygning, hvor vi sidder lige nu. Vi har fundet et rum, og vi sidder og kigger på nogle ophængte klude, hvor der er skrevet nogle forskellige små statements på. Vi drikker en kop kaffe, og vi skal tale sammen til mikrofonholder. Og jeg har valgt at invitere Johan, fordi jeg har lyttet meget til Johans musik i de senere år, de sidste 3-4 år, og er meget interesseret i for det første musikken i sig selv, og også måden Johan bruger sin musik sammen med andre kunstarter. Jeg ved, at meget af Johans musik og hans diskografi er lavet til teater og til moderne dans og til film især. Så det er noget af det, jeg gerne vil tale med Johan om i dag. Og nu er Johan fra Island, så vi har talt om, at vi måske skulle gøre det her på engelsk. Så det vil jeg forsøge at gøre fra nu af. Very nice to meet you, Johan.
Very nice to meet you, August.
It's a pleasure to be here. And I thought, well, yeah, I'm gonna try to do this the best way. my English is kind of fluent, but I can choke on it sometimes, so please excuse
me. Well, I can choke on my English as well, so we'll just choke together.
Okay. But Johan, yeah, as I said, very interesting your way of combining your music with other media. It sounds very modern to speak about intermedia, but for me it seems like your way of incorporating has been, you've done that from the beginning of your career, haven't you? Or I'm interested in how that came about.
I guess I sort of started writing. I mean, I have a background in kind of, you know, indie bands and noisy guitar bands, you know, going back to when I was 16, you know, I studied piano, and I've always been sort of interested in writing instrumental music and working with classical instrumentation, but sort of doing it in my own way, not in a classical academic way. It's really very much my own language, and the way that I started doing that kind of music was through theater, and I had a sort of reasonably long and very good association with a theater company in Iceland, where I had the opportunity to write quite a lot of music and to record it with musicians and to sort of experiment, and this was really how I kind of got started, doing what I'm doing now, and it was a very fruitful, very kind of very exciting time that yielded a lot of interesting, you know, results. And for example, Englabern, my first solo record, which came out in 2002, was a result of, is actually based on a theater score, music that I wrote for a theater piece of the same name. But what I did was, for the record, was that I expanded it and I wrote new music based on the themes. I rearranged and restructured the music to create something which would work on a record. So it's not simply like a collection of cues from the theater. It's hopefully, you know, a piece that works on its own, and it has qualities of a soundtrack. It has qualities of a of, you know, there are recurring themes and there are recurring, you know, ideas, and so it's kind of like this journey. But the idea was to create something which is independent from the from its origins, you know.
This is very interesting, because this brings about the what you're saying about remaking it or evolving it to be a work that can stand for itself, or can stand on its own. I think that's, first of all, it's very apparent when you hear the record. First time I heard it, I didn't know it was for theater, so it has that, or it had that effect on me at least, that it is a very clear story in itself. Like there are recurrent themes, and you kind of you follow the development very closely as a listener. But the theatrical elements must have had like an influence on the music, on in its offset, I guess. Which is something that I'm interested in, because I'm looking for different ways to, how can you say, like start a creative process when writing music. And I know you do film. I do some film as well, and that can be very liberating sometimes, I think, to have like you have some material that speaks for itself, like coming from another media, and you need to have the music complement that in some way. Mm-hmm. But then what I really like that you do is that you make it into a work that goes beyond that relationship with, for example, theater or film. That it's just it seems to me like an interesting way to work.
For Englebjørn, for example, it was kind of interesting, because it was really a matter of writing against the piece in a way, because it was a very violent piece, very kind of very dark and brutal piece of theater in a way, and my reaction to that was that, you know, the only thing I could do really was to write the complete opposite, you know, to write the kind of most gentle sort of delicate music possible, really. And that's really what's interesting about that world, and about that form, you know, writing for theater is it, and for films, is that you can you know, react to the material in different ways and interesting ways, and yeah, like you were saying, it's about kind of finding you know, ways to react to the material, and because with film music especially, you kind of have a very defined framework, and you have this duty to serve the greater whole, and the music has to be a part of a whole. It has to, you know, serve this greater purpose of telling the story. So in that sense, you're kind of you have this very definite brief, you know, when you're writing film music. But I think the challenge is to make something which also has character of its own, and which also has an identity, and without, you know, kind of being jarringly, you know, sort of. I mean, it can be. I really like it when film music calls attention to itself, and is very much a character of its own, you know. But that's not always appropriate.
Dette er mikrofonholder på Radio 24/7. Programmet, hvor to personer taler frit om det, de vil, uden nogen bryder ind.
I dag er det komponisten August Rosenbaum, der er taget til den frie udstillingsbygning i København. Han har inviteret komponisten Johan Johansson til en samtale om det narrative element i musikken. Og da Johan er islænding, foregår samtalen på engelsk.
I released recently this the score to Max Kestner's Drømme i København, which where I kind of followed a similar process really to Englebørn, in that I took the original material and sort of rearranged, reprocessed it. I recorded additional instruments and recorded some additional versions and created a new version of the music, which would hopefully work as an album.
Can you? Well, I have the record. I recently bought it on LP. It's out on LP, and yeah, I get a similar. I haven't heard that as much as I heard the Englebørn, but it seems like well. First of all, the titles are very specific. They're related to I guess both the plot and or the narrative in the film, and then they're related to specific sites in Copenhagen. Can you speak a little bit about the Copenhagen relation in that?
Yeah, I mean it's a film about Max Kestner is a Danish documentary filmmaker, and he works with he works very often with Danish themes and kind of in his own very individual voice. He has a very strong voice as a filmmaker, and this film it's a very visually very ambitious documentary shot on film on 35 and beautifully shot and in a very formalistic and very kind of visually strong way. It's very kind of, it has these almost these rules of how the camera moves. It's these sort of fixed tableaus that where the camera doesn't move and we just observe life, life in Copenhagen, ordinary life. And then the camera will start to move, just pan very, very slowly, or travel on a dolly very, very slowly, and it's kind of distant in a way. It's like a distant observer that kind of observes life and the inhabitants of the town and the buildings. And in a way, the buildings are the main characters. Like the human sort of characters in the film are always out of focus, for example, and the buildings are in focus, and it's it has this really strong strong identity, and it was a great project to do, because it's always nice to write music to strong images, and it was interesting for me to kind of give a voice in a way to these scenes and these sort of glimpses of this city, and for me as a foreigner, as someone who comes here as a guest and has this sort of guest's eye, I guess. But it's like relating to the titles that was very much taken from the script, and it's a very beautiful poetic lyrical script that was written by Max and his wife Gru, and they had these beautiful poetic phrases all over, and I basically sort of picked out the phrases that I liked the best and kind of applied them to the tracks that I felt fitted. So it's sort of it's evocative, and hopefully kind of listening to the album without the images, you can sort of get a glimpse of these sort of impressionistic images of sceneries, and these sort of kind of impressions of Copenhagen in a way, seen by a foreigner.
This brings about an interesting thing to talk about, I think, because. So, both with the Englebørn and the Max Kestner, you have we talked about, you have this material that speaks for itself and kind of offers a way to go, maybe go with it or go against it. But you have this narrative that can also be, well, I think there must be something you think about when you make instrumental music. You make music without lyrics, and when relating to an audience, do you consider, well, I guess you must consider that the instrumental music needs to speak to something emotional in the, I mean, how do you capture an audience making instrumental music that has no direct lyrics, or have, maybe where the narrative is more hidden? It seems to me that's you consider the audience in a very gentle way, I think, with your music. if do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's a challenge.
Okay.
In relating to an audience, or do you think about the audience when you make your music?
Answering that directly, I don't actually. I mean, I'm writing music for myself. I'm not really writing for anyone else, and it has to work for me. And I've learned through the years that if something works for me, it tends to work for other people as well.
Sorry to interrupt. Maybe let me rephrase the question, because I didn't mean it in a commercial way. No. And this needs to reach a certain segment or something. But
I understand what you mean. I think I know what you mean in terms of I have a background in literature rather than music. I studied at university. I studied literature and languages, and narrative is always very important to me, and sort of story and ideas, and they tend to be kind of. Before I start thinking about a piece of music, I tend to think, narratively and in terms of ideas and a kind of framework. And I have a hard time writing, like absolute music, music that has no, program or no, sort of underlying idea. I've never really done that, and I sort of. For me, there always has to be an idea before I start, and I tend to, and those tend to be come from films, they come from books, poetry, or ideas, philosophy, or whatever. And I think that sort of maybe provides a thread that is maybe only apparent, if you go a little deep, if you go a little deeper than. It's not something that I sort of hit people over the head with, but it's there, and it sort of binds things together in a way that feels satisfying to me in a way, and I mean sometimes it is quite obvious, like on the IBM 1401 album, for example, there is a quite an obvious thread in terms of the material that the music is based on, and that particular piece is based on recordings from that my father made 30 years ago or 40 years ago actually music that he programmed on a computer in the 60s. My father worked for IBM in the 60s, and he had this this computer, the IBM 1401, which was the first. There goes the bell again. Which was the first mass-produced computer, and my father learned this technique of creating music on it, which of course it was not designed to do at all. There were no speakers. There was no, it was this very basic adding machine, this basic calculating, it's a glorified calculator basically. But he found this method of programming music, which was then picked up by an AM radio that they placed next to the computer, which would pick up these electromagnetic waves that was emitted by the memory, the computer's memory, and they created this program which enabled them to write simple melodies and to record this. The melodies were picked up by the radio, and then they would record it on a reel-to-reel. Oops. On a reel-to-reel tape, and when they took the computer out of service in 1971, they decided to sort of document these sounds and this music that was that they had created on this computer, and sort of made a little speech, almost like a farewell speech, you know, saying goodbye to this old computer, and this tape. My father told me about this tape like 30 years later, and I asked him to, you know, please go and find it. You know, I'd love to hear it. And it turned out to be, you know, quite an interesting collection of sounds. And I decided to create something out of it. And so that became the basis of this piece, where I used the sounds of the computer, the original recordings, and created a loop and a sort of a, almost like a music concrete kind of bass from these sounds, and wrote a string orchestra arrangement. So it's kind of like a combination of these ancient electronic sounds and a conversation between an orchestra and an old computer. You know, this is something that interests me. You know, I'm interested in kind of narrative, you know, approach. Yeah, it's something that, you know, this sort of non-musical element, you know, has to be there for me in a way. And how does this work in your music? Do you are you comfortable with? Because I'm kind of fascinated by people who you know sit down and write music, you know, and it just sort of, you know, it just sort of flows out of them, and it sort of, you know, because I'm not like that. I really labor over every single note, you know, and it's music is not something that comes easily to me in a way, and. Do you feel? Do you write pure music? Do you think?
Well, I mean, I follow you in your need for an offset. But that's why I'm really interested in what you're saying. My mother is an actor too. So the whole theatrical element is very important for me. And that's kind of what I'm looking for, kind of a dramaturgy to be able to write music. So I but then again, I work a lot with improvisation in my, I come from a jazz background, and I've worked with, you know, improvisation within a frame in when I was during my, you know, musical upbringing. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I mean, you know, playing jazz standard material where you have a song, which is basically just a good song repertoire, mm-hmm. that and then leaves it open to the musician to kind of develop that material further, and so that's improvisation in that sense. But then I've started getting more and more interested with free improvisation, like improvisation with no offset. And then I'm kind of now getting into trying to draw a thread, combining the free improvisation that can have a narrative in itself. Well, for example, I did my finals concert at the conservatory this summer. I just finished the conservatory, and I wanted to, I well my, in general I want to be able to for me to feel good, I would like to, I'm getting very interested in doing film music. But then I have this, my own music, my own, I don't know if that's absolute, but my own like work as a composer. I'd like to combine those two. Mm-hmm. And I'm, so I'm looking for ways of doing that. And for my finals concert, I tried taking the whole sound design element of film, which I went into the woods and I recorded the woods at night in Sweden. And then I wanted to make a concert, like a 40-minute concert where I would kind of put the audience in, I mean, kind of a sound installation where the woods and the way like arbitrary sounds in the wood come about. I mean, when you're there for a certain amount of time, you start hearing the highway 2 kilometers away or like an owl or branches or twigs and you get nervous, are anyone here? So you sharpen your awareness of the sounds around you. And I think that's very similar to improvisation. So I did a concert where I did a sound design with actually Peter Albrechtsen, I don't know, you know? Yeah. So the whole concert started out with 10 minutes of woods, and then out of that came a very simplistic improvisation with a group that I had put together, and then the kind of the improvisation took over, and then the woods came back, and then in the end it became, we got to the morning in the woods, and so that kind of had, for me, had a very discrete narrative that I'm trying to experiment with, like how subtle can your narratives be, mm-hmm. and also when you don't have images, like the concrete images for people to watch, can you still give people a visual experience without having actual visuals there? Uh-huh. And that, well, I guess that's part of, I would like to keep working with narrative, but I'm not really sure how direct the narrative for me has to be in my music. Well, yeah.
It can I don't be know oblique. It can be, subtle, as you say.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in, like, for this improvisation with the wood sounds, did you react to the sounds themselves, or did you sort of create a layer on top of it, and you know, were the improvisations reactions to the natural sounds, or were they sort of, did they come from somewhere else, do you think?
I think we all try that. That's a thing in improvisation. There are different ways of approaching. Do you have like an action reaction way of improvising, where you hear a sound and then you use it to do something? You react very directly to the sounds. But then there's also I'm interested in, well, for this, to answer your question for the woods thing, we tried to make a world within the improvisation that had the same arbitrary character as the woods, like so no real reactions to each other actually, uh-huh. even, but just a total constant awareness of what's happening around us, and then so no, it was kind of two layers that lived next to each other,
okay.
Yeah.
Du lytter til mikrofonholder på Radio 24/7, som har overladt mikrofonen til de to komponister, August Rosenbaum og Johan Johansson fra Island. Af den grund fører samtalen på engelsk.
Maybe we have a different approach to making music. You say you labor over every note when writing music. And I guess I like where I am now. I like to start off with a clean sheet if I make my own music. If I'm not scoring for something, mm-hmm. But I guess, well, that kind of gives an image that we're far from each other regarding creative process. But I guess, well, I read yesterday about, I read about a project you're very involved with. You're the, what do you say, founding father of a project called Kitchen Motors, right? Mm-hmm. And let me just try to see what it seems like to me, mm-hmm. is, well, it says a lot of places that it's a think tank. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? I guess to me, it seems like it's a group of people that have a very natural way of flowing between art forms. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's a very open platform, mm-hmm. in Iceland, right? Or that you're part of.
Yeah.
Within Kitchen Motors, I guess there must be a very, you must have learned a lot of things about. How does jazz relate to classical music? How does improvisation relate to psych rock? Long, I mean, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Kitchen Motors was kind of like basically a group of three very different people. It was myself, who, you know, comes from a background in you know, alternative music, electronic music, whatever, and Ilmar Jensson, who is an improviser, guitarist with a jazz background, and Kira Kira, who is more of an electronic artist and with a visual arts background also. So we're friends, and we got together around 1998 in Iceland, and we wanted to sort of create a forum or a venue for a kind of an exchange between art forms and between, we're starting with music only. We created this series of concerts where we invited people from different bands to collaborate. So we just called people that we liked and said, hey, do you want to work with this guy? So we kind of created the collaborations, and so it was kind of like a dating service, you know. We basically set up this series of concerts, and it was kind of, I mean, most of the people were, you know, either from classical, electronic, or sort of improv, jazz improv backgrounds, and this worked very well, and it was very interesting. A lot of interesting things came out of that, and so we decided to continue with the work. And the next year we did a longer series, which was a year long series of concerts every month, or projects every month, where we asked artists from different backgrounds. For example, we asked the group Mum and the writer Sjón to write an opera together, and they wrote an opera in a month, you know, like a short chamber opera. And we asked a visual artist Magnus Paulsson and electronic laptop groups Didlipstepa to work together on a kind of installation concert, etc. So it was like a series of projects that were kind of curated by us and executed by these different people, and the results of this were concrete results was we released like two CDs of recordings from these events, and it was really kind of a series of experiments and which we did for a few years, and we stopped, actually. So Kitchen Motors doesn't exist anymore. We stopped around 2005, but we did, you know, maybe one or two things a year, you know, every year for that period. And it, for me, I mean, this was a tremendous experience. You know, it was a really amazing time, because it was such a, there was so much activity and so much sort of nourishment in these combinations and in these sort of creating these hybrids in a way, and creating and also with a very much a kind of a do-it-yourself kind of spirit. I mean, we had no budget for the first series at all, and the second series we had a little budget, but very, very small. So it was really an exercise in you know, doing, you know, big things for very little money, and so it was a tremendous school and a tremendous tremendous experience in terms of and very much an inspiration. And I think it sort of I draw on that period, you know, every day. You know, it's very much, even though what I'm doing now is more, I'm more focused on you know, my own work and what I'm doing. I think I draw very much from working, you know, from working on that project, and I take a lot of sort of nourishment from it, you know, in that sense. I'm not a skilled improviser myself, and I don't think I'm a good improviser really, but in a sense, the way I work with a computer, for example, you know, in this sort of putting together recordings, and making collages in a way, which is a big part of what I do. I mean, I think you know, the physical act of putting notes on paper and communicating to a musician is only, you know, 60-70%, you know, maybe, you know, 70% of the result. And I think the rest happens in the studio and sort of working in the studio and creating the sound world, you know, which kind of envelops and becomes a significant part of the final result. And so for me, I've tried, for example, working with in this sort of purely classical way of writing out, you know, music and putting it in front of musicians and recording that, and that's never really satisfactory for me, you know. Mm. I always have to, you know, it feels like a stage is missing, you know, and that stage is working in the studio and using all the means, you know, available and using that tool and that instrument. For me, I mean, the studio is an instrument, and it's kind of the only instrument that I'm really proficient at, you know, and that's sort of, you know, manipulating, editing, and cutting together and processing the sound and, using the studio as an instrument. And that process is very improvisatory. Exactly. In a way, because it's something that happens very, in a very kind of, you know, almost like a, you know, splatter painting. You know, it's really a matter of just sitting down and kind of turning off your brain and molding the material until something happens, you know. And the computer is very good at sort of chance operations in a way. It's very, and I love you know throwing things in randomly and letting the computer find things for me, you know, and letting the computer kind of make decisions in a way. And sometimes they're bad decisions, but you know, I can always select those afterwards. And you know, I love that sense of randomness that the computer can give you.
So in that sense, you are, I mean, equally improvising, yeah, as you're saying yourself.
So, yeah.
And I totally agree with you. Mm. It's just a matter of, yeah, what is your instrument of improvisation? Mm. I hear that also from studio rat friends of mine that, you know, I'm not an improviser, but the media is just different. The process seems very much the same.
Exactly.
Yeah. But what then fascinates me is that in a studio you have, you can think of whatever. Can I bring in a French horn and see what happens here? Or can I, you can draw on the outside as much as you want. Like, there's no limit. And when in an improvisational context on your instrument, for me as a pianist, well, then I only have my piano and the sounds I can make with that, and then the sounds coming from the musicians I chose to play with, which is, yeah, I guess there's a sense of the grass being greener on the other side. But
limitations are very good also.
Yeah, I was about to say that also. But, I mean, it's just, I'm fascinated with being able to mold whatever sound world you want. And, yeah.
But I think that's also the, you know, kind of the problem with computers in a way, because there are so many possibilities, and you have to you know, to work with them effectively, you have to be able to impose a kind of self-discipline and to impose your own limitations, exactly. You know, and exactly. And set yourself rules and set yourself a kind of a, you know, create a like a game plan, you know, that you follow and like you know, game rules. Because kind of in a world of unlimited, you know, possibilities, you know, it's, you know, that's simply a kind of a, you know, a very necessary element, I think.
Yeah, the computer is, I can definitely see that. Well, I never write music using a computer. I record the music when I'm improvising or trying to find material. I record it in a long stretch of like an hour, 2 hours of music, but mm-hmm. I never use the, not even to notate music mm-hmm. when I've done it, because yeah. I'm afraid what it will do to the material. I don't know if I have that restraint. But
do you record the improvisations and then sort of pick out the yeah. The parts
started
that you like?
To do that. Yeah. I've when I, for example, when I did my debut album a couple of years ago, it's called Beholder. That's put together of like themes that I've done and that I haven't notated until I needed to record it with a group of people. So the selection process was that if I remembered the theme the next day, then that was still a keeper.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And I so I've been working in that way for a long time, which mm-hmm. is, I guess, a really old-fashioned way of working today with all these possibilities. But for me, that had a that was a good parameter for me. Like, what if the melodic content was something that I liked enough to remember it the day
yeah.
after? Then that was good.
Yeah, it's a good good benchmark, I guess.
Det der mikrofonholder på Radio 24/7, hvor pianist og komponist August Rosenbaum har inviteret den islandske komponist Johan Johansson til en snak om deres forskellige tilgang til komposition.
But it's in a way it's very similar for me also. I mean, I only put kind of note to paper when I need to communicate to someone else. Yeah. You know, generally, you know, I just keep it in my head or you know, recorded on a sequencer to you know, as a kind of a sketch pad. Yeah. But in terms of notation, it's really only if I'm working with another musician. And I mean, but the actual writing tends to happen in my head, or you know, when I go out walking or you know, it's sort of. It happens that I sort of sit down and you know, just play and you know, wait until something happens, you know, but surprisingly often, you know, I kind of have a good idea of what I want to do mm. when I sit down and yeah. and play something, you know.
Which is also necessary, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't just sit down and wait for emotion to happen. No, I understand. True. But I'm interested in hearing you said that you never tried writing something without, because you did another solo album called Footlandia, right? Mm-hmm. That's not a score for a film or anything, is it? But it has a really, or correct me if I'm wrong.
No, it's an album, yeah, yeah, very much, yeah.
But it has a really strong theme that relates to like industrialism and rocketry and spacecrafts and. What was the process around that? Did you just you chose material that interested you, and then
it sort of came. It started from this image that I saw of this old Ford Model T automobile that was stuck in the jungle, sort of in a kind of a ditch somewhere in the jungle. And it was a photo in a book that I was reading, a novel about Fordlandia, which was the kind of rubber plantation that Henry Ford set up in the Amazon jungle in the 1920s, because he needed his own source of rubber for his tires for his automobiles, and because the British had this monopoly on rubber. And that was kind of a grand project that he had. He wanted to sort of build his own kind of utopia, his own kind of his own version of Detroit in the Amazon jungle. So he just created this American town, you know, in the middle of the jungle, and you know, with churches, hamburger stands, you know, and but he employed natives, you know, like local Amazon people, you know, to work there, and they kind of after a while started to rebel against the sort of his ideas of how to, you know, manage this little dictatorship, you know. And so it turned into this sort of workers' revolt, and finally, you know, after a few years, this idea was abandoned, but the town is still there. It's still there, you know, in the Amazon jungle, kind of overgrown with vegetation, and I found there was something poignant and interesting about this. So that kind of, you know, became this the basic theme of this kind of hubristic project that you know, this utopian kind of and kind of nightmarish, you know, idea gone wrong, and there were some other themes also, yeah, relating to rocketry and to which is maybe a little bit, you know, too long to go into here. I mean, yeah. we could yeah. but it's, I mean, it's I kind of saw it as a kind of a, you know, these sort of little stories that were, and it's, you know, when you open the album, when you listen to the album, and you only have the titles which sort of refer to it, you know, and you don't really have much else. You have some images, but I kind of wrote on my webpage. I wrote like a little sort of little essay about the ideas behind it, but you know, not too much. But it's sort of, you know, It's a sort of thing where, you know, if people are interested, they can, you know, look it up, but it's also something that people can totally ignore and just listen to the music, but I kind of, you know, in a way I was kind of writing my own little film script, you know, and so it was kind of this sort of strange juxtaposition of these stories about people who were kind of overreaching or you know, blowing themselves up in a way, you know. I mean, yeah. So it's sort of so it was just this sort of series of images, really, that sparked that album and kind of.
Going back to what we talked about before about narratives being clear or hidden in music, I guess, because what you're bringing about here is, I mean, they're really strong themes and very very literate themes that inspired you to make music. And I guess I'm just realizing that of course these stories, you say that you didn't write them in the liner notes, or they don't appear on the record. And then if people are interested, they can go and read about it. But I guess there must be a sense of I mean, this story maybe it's not necessary for the experience of the music. It's something that inspired you or ignited the material on your part, but it doesn't need to be a very direct part of the experience for the listener, right? I mean, because when I heard the record the first time, I didn't know anything about the background for the music, no. Which was, I mean, I don't know if what I would have thought if I had heard the story before. Then you try to look for, I guess, instantly you try to look for little points of recognition, like okay, Ford and car industry and rocket. I mean, it's, there must be a very delicate balance of how much do you want to occupy?
Well, it's kind of, I mean, I kind of, you know, maybe I trip myself up a little bit because it's I'm working with a non-narrative, you know, form, and yeah, a non sort of non-textual form, but sort of, you know, So it's really, you know, I'm kind of at the mercy of people kind of, you know, reacting to these titles and to these stories in the same way as I do, you know, because I can't really communicate the stories, you know, in a verbal way. You know, I only have like text and some sort of scattered images and song titles to communicate it with, and so it kind of, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, don't really bother, and they just listen to the music as music, you know, and that's totally fine, you know. I'm perfectly happy with that, but it's sort of you know, there is, you know, the occasional listener that gets it, you know, and that maybe it's because they've read the same books that I have, and they have the same frame of reference or something, but I'm not, you know, I'm not a writer, I'm not a novelist, and I'm not someone who can, you know, you know, in a way, you know, in a way, For Atlantia is kind of like a wordless opera, you know, in a way, you know, it's like a, or it's like a, you know, soundtrack to a documentary that hasn't been made yet, you know, so it's in a way, it's kind of like this abstract documentary that doesn't have a film to go with it, you know, yeah, but it's strange. I mean, I the whole For Atlantia thing. I sort of heard the story from this book, this Portuguese book that was written in the 90s that I heard about, and then I read a little article on the net about it, and then I did the album. I was sort of kind of fascinated by the story, and then 6 months later, a book, like a major sort of piece of historical sort of research was published about it, and now they're making a film based on that book. Okay. And so it's sort of, you know, it seems that it's a theme that sort of catches the imagination of people at the same time, you know, and in different parts of the world, you know. But
we're coming to an end here, but I guess what you're saying about being able to reach deeper in experiencing the music, such as we're talking about Fordlandia here, by reading the whole background for it, kind of come back to the first point we made about music being able to stand by itself, even though it's related to literate or visual material, what I was saying before, that I didn't have those thoughts when I heard Fordlandia the first time. I guess it just seems to me like, well, your job was well done. The music definitely speaks for itself. It doesn't need the story.
So what were the, I'm interested, what images did you sort of generate, and what was your, you know, kind of what, if any, what images did the music sort of create in your mind?
Well, I focus a lot on the repetition in your in the themes. Kind of bring that brought me to a special, I guess, state of being. Like it.
So it wasn't so much. It was more like an abstract kind of, sort of physical or kind of,
maybe a very sonorical, like a sound related place of being. I was, Is that? I don't know if that's fulfilling at all.
That's interesting. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's interesting to hear how people react to music, you know, and it's kind of you have to be prepared that people don't react in the same way to, you know, different people did react differently to music, and that's interesting, and that's really strong, I think, and I'm always interested in you know how people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how people, you know, experience it, and how people sort of, you know, what they take away from it, if anything, and so it's thanks for that.
All right, Ivan, thank you very much for meeting me here today.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Mikrofonholder er færdig for i dag. Programmet er tilrettelagt og produceret af Line Fabricius fra Mikrofon. Om lidt er der nyheder på Radio 24/7.